Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton. Joining me today is Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Hello.
That's right, everyone. And on this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about NAMM. What our favourite things were from NAMM. Other things we should have spoken about at NAMM. What we've been up to this week. And there's some cool news from Ashdown and Lunarstone as well. So keep tuned.
Okay, you've made it through the intro.
Ah, there you go. I certainly did make it through the intro.
It sounded like you were going to cut off then. You were like, so stay tuned, and then it's just going to cut, and then it's going to be something else.
So, this is our first podcast back from NAMM, and we are Mark Packhamless. That's right. The dullest man in the universe is still on holiday, leaving the three of us to try and sort of amble through some form of coherent podcast. We will certainly do our best. But yes, we've got back from NAMM. We're all recovered to an extent.
Are we? We're all recovered.
All right, I'm not even. I'm nowhere close to recovery. I was listening to the 60s Cycle Hum podcast this afternoon. They've done their post NAMM podcast already. Slightly ahead.
Did you listen to it because you saw someone on 60s Cycle Hum talking about you? Is that why you listen to it?
No, I do listen to their podcast, okay. But yeah, that is why. I was like, I want to hear about me. And I was pretty happy to find that I took up a decent 10 minutes of their podcast.
Oh, okay, good. I'm actually quite behind on my podcast, so thank you for giving me the heads up that I can give this week's 60s Cycle Hum a skip.
No, it was a good podcast. But yeah, I was pretty happy to find that I was the subject of... Unfortunately, I'm never the subject of people's conversation for like... my guitar knowledge or musicianship or anything like that.
You're always on here for bass-related queries, and we don't really have any bass-related queries. So.
We don't. The bass is just dead. But yeah, they basically just talked about my alcoholism, which was fine. I think I did well.
Was this some sort of intervention podcast?
Oh, that would be great.
Was it actually a podcast?
Yeah.
Did Stephen Ryan just call you up and just make sure you were okay?
Are you okay, mate? Can you just... You need to just, you know, drink less less Sunset Dawns. But yes, anyway, yes, welcome to the podcast. We're going to talk about everything about NAMM and what our favourite things were from the floor at NAMM and just an overall roundup, because I think there are still some super cool things that we checked out on the... on the last day that we haven't spoken about. But first, we should talk about what's happened since, because a few of us stuck around a little bit afterwards. Jay Cross, first of all, you went to Guitar Center. You did a bit of a GC visit. JC at GC.
That's right. Yeah, well, I flew home on the Monday, so the day after NAMM.
Right.
And I first of all, I should apologize to all of my fans for not being on the podcast for the last week or so.
Oh, it's terrible.
Last couple of weeks. I know that I'm the main reason that people listen. I do apologize. Unfortunately, some of us had real work to do and weren't able to treat this as a boozy jolly. So, you know, I was I was out and about earning my crust, and I didn't get a chance to knock about with you boys too much and drink booze.
No, you were a company man this NAMM.
I was very busy. I had a great time, actually. I tell you what, I had a really good time. But after NAMM, me and a couple of the people that I work with, we rented a car and we drove to Hollywood, and we went to Sunset Boulevard, went to check out the big Guitar Center, and it's fantastic. It really was a fantastic shop. Outside they've got loads of memorable, not outside, but outside of the shop behind in glass cabinets, they've got loads of rock and roll memorabilia. They've got Marky Ramone's drum kit. They've got a full Ramones mannequin. They've got loads of people's handprints, loads of famous people's handprints, which was really cool, including Leo Fender's, Les Paul's.
Oh, that's cool.
All of the Ramones are there. All of Smashing Pumpkins.
They really love the Ramones.
They really love the Ramones. But I mean, who wouldn't? You know, who wouldn't? Creators of rock and roll.
Right.
Real creators of rock and roll. Okay. But they had loads of really cool stuff. And then we went inside and we were having a bit of a look around. And what was really cool was seeing some stuff that I've only ever heard about, because it's Fender stuff that's Guitar Center exclusive. So there was a load of stuff there that we'd never seen before. So that was really cool. And we went into the vintage section, which was... It really was a mate. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. Some of the stuff that they had there was just unreal. I tried what is absolutely my dream guitar. I felt really bad about this because, well, kind of bad about it. So I was with a couple of colleagues, one of whom used to own a 1982 Les Paul Custom in black,
right.
And it was his dream guitar, and he sold it, and a little while ago. And has always said that if he ever got a chance, he'd buy another one. And they didn't have a 1982 Les Paul Custom in Ebony, but they did have a 1983 Les Paul Custom in Natural. And he looked at that and he went, well, I mean, that's very close. That's very close. And so he asked to try it because he was really considering buying it. And whilst he was plugging that in, I saw up on the wall this, which is my absolute dream guitar, a 1960 Les Paul Jr. double cut in TV yellow.
Oh, this guitar looks...
It looked unbelievable.
What an absolute
and
dream guitar.
I really, really sheepishly went up to the guitar shop employee and said, is there any chance I could just... I don't need to plug it in. I just want to, like, play both the chords that I know. And he got it down, and I sat there and I played it, and I was such a nerd. I got one of my mates who I was with to take a couple of photos of me holding it. It was amazing. It was so
you got someone to take photos of you playing it whilst you wore sunglasses.
The sunglasses fell. I'd put them up on my head and they fell down onto my... That's the story that I'm going to rock with anyway.
Okay.
So, you know.
That's cool.
But but apart from that, they had loads of stuff. There was a whole load of Les Paul Juniors. There was tons of Les Paul Customs. And then also loads of other weird stuff that I just wasn't expecting to see. There was a load of Mustangs, which were amazing. There was a whole wall of Epiphone... Wilshires and what's the one that is the same shape as a Wilshire but isn't a Wilshire, not a Coronet, a
it is a Coronet, isn't it?
I thought it was Wilshire and Coronet.
Yeah, it's Coronet, I'm sure it is.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah,
maybe
it is.
Maybe
yeah.
It is Coronet. Coronet. Yeah, it is Coronet. I found the picture. Yeah, there was a load of Wilshires and a load of Coronets, and they were amazing. And there was a really weird ES330 with just a single P90 in the middle.
Yeah, that is what
it's just,
said,
just amazing. Like,
oh, man, that's the dream.
But like weird seeing like an actual 1960.
Do you know, I saw a 330 where the P90 had been replaced with a humbucker at the South of England Guitar Show the other month. They're so super rare, 330s. I would absolutely buy one.
So I saw someone. Oh, I should mention, by the way, that Les Paul Junior that I tried was $10,000. You know, it was in USD. But yeah, some of the other weird stuff that they had in there was a Dan Electro six string sitar shape.
Oh yes,
it was amazing.
Yes.
As I say, a load of really cool Mustangs. They had a Travis Bean. 1974 Travis Bean with a aluminium neck, you know, fully aluminium neck.
Amazing.
Some really cool basses. A couple of 4001s. There was one. I'm just looking for the picture now that really weirded me out. I'd never seen one before. It was I don't know if I took a picture of it in the end, but it was a. There it is. It was, sorry, I realize this is dreadful radio. It was a 1978 standard P bass. Fretless,
right?
Maple neck,
right?
Maple neck fretless.
That's pretty cool.
When do you see those?
No, yeah, you don't.
It was.
Why would you have
Fender.
A maple neck one?
Well, actually, I used to own a maple neck fretless Ibanez Roadster, a 1979 Ibanez Roadster.
Oh, really?
Maple neck. Yeah, but it was when I bought it. The guy who had it before me used round wounds on it, and maple.
Brilliant.
Because maple's so brittle as opposed to rosewood, it just really burnt like full lengths, like ferrules into the neck, so it was pretty. You definitely couldn't use any vibrato on it.
Right. Okay. but yeah, the other thing that they had there, the real sort of piece de resistance, if you will, was a 1952 first production year Les Paul gold top
man.
Signed by Les Paul.
Oh. Signed by Les Paul.
Mate,
you've ruined it. Some guy called Les has signed it.
Oh, Les?
Was it the Les Paul?
Some guy called Les Paul, yeah. So that was amazing. And then after that, we went over the road to the Mesa Boogie shop, which was really cool. So
Wait. They still make amps?
They still make amps.
Does anyone buy them anymore?
I mean, we were the only ones in the shop, but I'm sure that there is. I'm sure that you'd know better than I would.
Has anyone bought a Mesa Boogie since Foo Fighters' second record?
No, you're right. I think everyone's buying Twins now. Twins, and I think everyone's buying EVH 5150 Mark III's. So we went over the road to the Boogie shop, and they were using it as a way to showcase their custom shop. So they had all their amps in with different color face plates and different color fret cloths and different color Tolex. They had like Coco Bolo encased amps.
Oh, man.
So, you know, it was all very Mesa Boogie, but they also had, it was also just a guitar shop. So they had a load of, not a load, but a few select very cool brands in there. First of all, with the pedals, they were a Ramble Effects like reseller.
Oh, yeah.
So they had like all the Marvel drives, and I had a chat with the geezer
awesome.
About that. They had the they were Free the Tone stockist. They had some Chase Bliss stuff. They had some Mesa Boogie pedals, of course. But the guitars were the really interesting selection. They had some Nash custom shop stuff.
I love Nash.
And they also had they were also a Titan stockist.
Oh really?
Yeah, which was the thing that which was
so
the thing that
cool.
Yeah, that was what really got me, because I nearly didn't see them. I nearly just walked straight past them, but as we were going past, I just out the corner of my eye I caught what looked like a Titan.
For listeners, because I think Nash are quite established, we can get away with just saying Nash.
Sure, yeah, you're right.
Explain Titan.
So Titan is the quote unquote budget brand of Cower guitars. Doug Cower being a luthier who you guys met at the show.
God. Oh my
I didn't
God.
Get a chance to meet him.
Nicest dude on the planet.
Friends with him now.
Are you?
Friends with Doug Cower.
I was really glad I didn't get to meet him. Listeners will remember Cower guitars from the Canyon Aero, which was the the sort of Gretsch looking guitar with Simpsons inlays.
He was saying he might make another.
Well, I mean, bonkers. Yeah. That's, but Titan is the sort of budget range of those. Now, if I remembering correctly, they're all about $1,300. So, you know, it's not cheap as chips, but they are American made, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
They're American made and they're sort
yeah,
of...
Yeah, they're still US made.
Yeah, they're just kind of stripped back. So yeah. You don't get all the really fancy inlays.
Yeah, so it's not binding and funky no. inlays. It's just
and I know that
functional workmanship.
I know that Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum's got one because we were actually talking about them. Ryan and I on one of the 5-minute occasions that I got to speak with him. I said like, I didn't get a chance to go to the Cowl booth and I was really hoping to. And he, you know, he brought up the fact that he's got this Titan and he just absolutely loves it. So I was really glad to see that they were in a shop as yeah. Well as just being a, you know, not custom built, but as well as just being a sort of one person luthier.
Absolutely.
Geezer.
Absolutely. What
it's
brand?
Not just an internet company. They are establishing themselves as a real company, which is something that I really like.
I think for us, they've kind of come out of nowhere. I know that Ryan and the 60 Cycle Hum boys have known about them for some time and stuff, and I'm sure maybe they are more established on the other side of the pond from us, but for us, they kind of came out of nowhere. And to turn up at NAMM and where Cowa had their booth, there were two booths for Cowa. But
did they have a Cowa booth and a Titan booth?
I don't know what this...
Yeah, kind of.
It's sort of. They had one that was like a bit of both because they also make guitar cases. So there was one that had Titan, Cowa and some guitar cases, and that was a much more functional booth. And then the other one was on the... There was an area, like a sectioned off area, in the same way that... there was kind of a boutique pedal builders area where everyone shared a stand. There was this, are you a mental luthier? Sort
right,
of area,
okay.
Where it was sort of, it was almost all in one area, all on one stand, but with everyone with their own little table.
That wasn't where Kiesel Carving were, was it?
No.
It was the, it's called the Boutique Guitar Showcase. And yeah, it's like, all the most mental guitar builders, but then they put Cowa at the front because they're probably the most
the
normal
most
and everyone goes they look great, kind of look around and then you just get there was one
into
that was like
a bonkers vortex.
Well, one was like what's it called, like a resin, but it had like doll's heads and butterflies injected into the resin, and then that made up the body, which also was covered in like carpet.
Oh, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. There was some absolute wang on that stand. But the Cowa guitars were like front and center. And they really were. They were the best things there. There were some great guitars there. But he stood out as being the most tasteful luthier there. He had a complete range of guitars that were all finished in the same kind of... sort of teal.
Oh, I saw. Yeah, it was a.
Yeah, he'd done a complete set, five guitars and an electric mandolin.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was that it set off the entire area. It was much better than anything else on that stand. Like, absolute hats off to Cowa.
Oh, that was so good. So he had a. Sorry, Joe, what'd you say?
No, go on.
I was going to say that I think it was the Banshee they had there with three in the green with gold hardware, three TV Jones pickups, and it just looked absolutely amazing. I was just like, I wish I had money. Really wanted it. It looked amazing. I think he'd sold a couple by the first day, I think. He'd already said he'd sold a couple.
The Banshee is the Firebird looking one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one for me. That's the guitar that really turned me onto Cowa. I remember seeing a post on one of the Facebook forums about it, and Doug Cowa responding, saying that if I'm remembering this correctly, he did actually work with Gibson to put together a guitar that was different enough so that he wouldn't like get, you know, 6 months down the road and then get the old C&D. So that guitar looks fantastic. I was really disappointed I didn't get a chance to come and see them.
I bumped into Doug Cowa on the Sunday. And I was walking around with Mary Spender, and I bumped into Doug Cowa, and he was wearing a Matt Knight badge.
Yes,
which is pretty good. I was quite happy with that.
That's really funny.
I think he's going to come on the podcast. I think I'm going to interview him about the Simpsons, And maybe talk about some guitars, because he loves The Simpsons probably more than he likes making guitars, to be honest.
Wow, good old boy.
From when we spoke to him.
Yeah, I think he made about two or three Simpsons reference in the 10-minute conversation I had with him.
Oh,
yeah.
And his business card is also a Simpsons reference.
Oh, it has a
reference
Simpsons reference.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, it is as well. So, Jacobs, was there anything else at the Mesa Boogie shop that you saw? I don't know.
No, they had... There was Nash, there was... there was Cower. I think they had some, not Cower, there was Titan. I think they had some PRS there as well, you know, which you'd expect.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was quite a small shop, but if ever you're in the area, I'd really recommend checking it out. There's also a Sam Ash just over the road, which I really wanted to go and check out, but we just didn't have time. And what we actually wanted to do was go to the Amoeba Music.
Oh, yeah.
Around the corner. So
I went there. Did you go there?
Yeah, we went to Amoeba.
What did you buy?
All I bought was an Amoeba record, an Amoeba Music T-shirt, and I bought a Brian Eno T-shirt as well.
Oh, fair enough.
It was so big. I wasn't sure where to start. So there's a couple of record stores in Brighton, and I've got a good relationship with the people that work there, and I like to go there, and I couldn't expend the time that I would have needed to get the most out of being there.
No,
but
definitely.
It's mad. I'd really recommend going.
I have the same routine every time I go to Amoeba Records, which is to just find the Deerhoof section, because Deerhoof are such a kind of a quirky small math band. They do loads of like limited edition releases, and they'll do like 500 of it, and it'll be an album that I can get over here, but on like a limited edition
colour
vinyl.
Colour
vinyl. So there's always something there that I can't get in the UK.
So
I end up, every time I've been to Amoeba Records, I've just bought
a
load of Deerhoof records.
There we go.
So it works for me. So Matt Knight, since we've been back from NAMM, you've been modding your SG, or thinking about modding your SG.
Basically, obviously, I didn't play guitar for 3 months when I was in Japan, and then I came back, and then it was Christmas, and then I was like, right, January, you know, time for a new rig. So I ripped everything apart, and then I did exactly what I did last year, was rip it apart before 2 days before I went to NAMM, and I was like, well, I'm not going to rebuild it now, am I? And it's still being, it's just in pieces next to me. But I just gave everything a bit of a restring, and I was like, do you know what? I really love this Gibson, and it's not worth any money to sell. And it's just sitting here, and I'm like, maybe I just need to like breathe some life into it. And I thought maybe it could do with some new pickups. It's had the same pickups for quite some time.
So what pickups?
Has it had the same pickups? Isn't it the longest running guitar that you own, or something?
Technically, my acoustic is the longest running guitar.
Nobody cares about acoustic guitars, Matt.
We've mentioned this on the podcast before, but Matt Knight lent me that SG, I don't know, like 3 years, 4 years ago, for me to play. I played the first ever, it was the first ever lesbian, what would you call something if there are two religions involved? It was like a Jewish Christian lesbian wedding, and it was the first ever one. And I was the wedding band, and the wedding band consisted of they wanted to, the two girls get married wanted to make the band up of their friends, but the only friends they had was a keyboard player, me, and a drummer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you got roped into it as well.
Yeah,
the only friends that they didn't have anyone who could play guitar, so you got asked.
Well, no, they didn't. So I had to play guitar and bass. So I made myself like a dual rig. It was great. It was loads of fun. I was bi-amping into a bass amp and a guitar amp, and I used Matt's SG. What were the pickups?
And that was the last gig I ever played.
Yeah. What were the pickups that you popped in that SG?
It had two bare knuckle Mississippi Queen P90s in it, I think, at that point.
Which were perfect. I must say, absolutely perfect for 2.5 hours of Pink covers. Which is literally what they asked for.
And then I replaced the bridge pickup with a DiMarzio PAF Pro. But then that became kind of irrelevant once I got the Les Paul. And then it's kind of just sat unused. And to be honest, all my guitars have sat relatively unused since I bought the Music Man a year ago. But I was like, I should probably just do something different with it. And then, you know, Perry Ormsby was like, oh, I'll just send you a load of free stuff. And I was like, cheers, mate. really nice to meet you, Nam. Thanks for all the free stuff. All the free stuff that you're going to send me. I don't know. I'm going to stick some new pickups in it. And it needs a new wiring harness because it's got a circuit board in it and I need to rip the circuit board out.
Why?
Really. Just because I think it's been butchered somewhat because it was plug and play. So like every time we've tried to like wire pickups in, we've had to like faff around with it. And I just think maybe I'll just take out the circuit board and just put some decent, just a decent wiring harness in it instead.
I see.
Maybe I was just like, I know it came up again in the Facebook group today. I was like, the pickup combination I really loved hearing was the pickups that are in the new St. Vincent HH. And I was like, is there some way I can have a five-way pickup selection on my SG? Can I put a blade in it?
What are you talking about?
You can get a six-way one, can't you? You can get a six-way pickup selector.
Matt, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
In the words
I know,
of
but just when you're bored fella, and you're just like, oh, I'll just do something with this guitar I'm not playing. You're just
Jeff
like,
Goldblum.
Yeah.
You spent so much time working out if you could. You didn't stop to think if you should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, for listeners, Joe just
I was trying to think what
his
movie
hand
that
on
was
the table
from,
and then
like,
shook it in agony.
I was thinking about, you know, the Jurassic Park quote thing, you know, where he's like, you package it, you put it on the front of a plastic lunchbox and you sell it. Want to sell it? Good old Jeff Goldblum. Anyway, so
to the Park podcast.
Exactly. That brings us neatly onto, well, not neatly at all, onto what were our favourite things from NAMM 2018. So we've had time for the dust to settle. We've got excited about all the things that happened at NAMM. We've seen a ton of stuff. And to be honest, you know, the hype has died down around some of the things that we may have thought were going to be the big hitters.
We're out of the NAMM bubble where everybody gets excited by stuff, and now we're back to just real life.
Exactly. So I kind of
where people go back to asking questions on the Facebook forum about whether or not they should buy a Baja telly.
Sterling James Valentine.
No, oh mate. The first thing I saw
you
when
tell
I got
that
home,
that wasn't a podcast listener when someone was like, "Can someone explain the difference between a Mexican Telecaster and a Baja?"
I just thought it was so funny. The first NAMM's definitely over.
Oh man, it's such a stupid
question. What was
question.
Weird though is coming back and sort of looking over NAMM, I was like, I definitely didn't see enough, and I'm sure I walked it like three or four times.
I didn't see anything. I don't think I could focus on most of the time that I was there.
You what? Sorry.
I don't think I saw anything. I don't think I could focus the bulk of the time I was on the floor.
Can I? I'm going a little off piste here, but I actually have a question. I have a listener question.
Shoot.
Mainly aimed at Matt. Matt, I'm sorry to put you on the spot here. You know that new thing Strymon released?
Oh, the Eurorack module.
What is it? Was it like a looper? Right. Okay. I got that it was a looper. And I sat down with one. Well, I didn't sit down with one. I found the Strymon booth downstairs. It was one of the only things that I set out to do. And I sat front of it for about 10 minutes with some sort of Moog synth and some other pedals. And I couldn't work out what to do with it. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, well, I am still learning Eurorack and understanding modular synthesis, and basically it's the looper part of a Strymon timeline in Eurorack format, which means it's basically controlled by various control voltages from oscillators or LFOs, or it's kind of going to be an odd one to explain, right? I guess. But I think I'm just trying to find the name, because there was one before, but I think the page I'm looking at is quite old. I don't think it's on there. But I think basically it is the looper of a timeline, but instead of having buttons for record and play, it's all controlled via control voltage.
Right.
So
weird.
Just a weird thing for them to do. But modular synthesizers are becoming quite big. Like ZVEX last year did a bunch of modular synthesizer stuff, so you can buy a Fuzz Factory in a module. And without going too crazy, that's what I did on Sunday when I was just like, right, show's basically over for me. I'm pretty dead from Saturday night. I'm going to go and walk around the modular synthesizers because my mate was like, please check it out for me. And it was, there's some of the best inventions I've ever seen were in that section. Like some of the stuff that people were creating, just like, I have no idea what I would do with this. But there was a company, and we did talk about it probably a couple years ago, called Pittsburgh Modular. And they actually made a pedal board that you could plug your guitar into and then put Eurorack modules on. And then you could plug your guitar through a bunch of Eurorack modules.
Yeah, which is something you can't normally do. And I remember it, yeah.
Yeah, which is something you can't normally do because the line level signal of Eurorack is really hot. It's like 20. Yeah. It's like 20V or something. So you can't plug a guitar straight in. And I went to Pittsburgh Modular and went, are you going to make any of those pedal boards? And they went, wow, you're the first person to ask that this whole weekend. And I was like,
that's a no.
And they were like, yeah, well, we sort of did it and it didn't really take off. And we thought it was a massive shame. And I was like, look, here's my card. Here's my email. Find me one and I will buy it. And they were like, okay, we'll see what we can do. But yeah, it's, there was some crazy stuff there, but effectively things like recording and looping and like the tap tempo are all controlled by a control voltage. So for example, you can record in time by sending the LFO trigger out from a particular module or something like that. So yeah, unless you're really into synthesis, I don't think you're going to get it. And I'm into synthesis and don't understand it, so I don't really get it either. But regardless, a very cool bit of kit.
Right, well, there we go. Bonkers.
So so speaking, as we're on the NAMM tact, bringing it back to my original point, I'd like to talk about what everyone's favourite things were from NAMM. Jay Cross, I was going to ask everyone what their favourite sort of guitar amp, effect pedal, and biggest surprise was from NAMM. But I appreciate, as a company man, you had much less time to walk the floor than perhaps me and Matt did. So maybe what were, just in general, what were your favourite things that you came across at NAMM now that the dust has settled?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of the weird things that I saw. One of the first things that we saw when we went for a little walk around was I was with our friend Dan Grace, friend of the podcast Dan Grace, who works with me now. He does a similar job to me, but for acoustic guitars and Squire Electrics, but mainly acoustic guitars. And obviously part of that involves ukuleles, and so we were all looking out for stuff that we would, you know, need to know for work. And one of the things that we bumped into was the Mahalo booth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my favorite stand.
The Mahalo booth, and they had a bunch of really, really weird, like, toy ukuleles, but they'd done a good job of making them weird and funny. And I realize that I'm so far off of our, everyone's turning off now. I'm talking about funny ukuleles. But one of the things that I really loved was, and I'll show Joe this picture, was this skull ukulele.
Yeah.
Where they had turned the body of the ukulele upside down
so that the brain of the skull was essentially the top of the body, so that the eyes for the cutout could be in the right place.
That was really weird and really funny. I really liked the obviously we went to the only ball booth. I really liked the new Albert Lee. Both the Sterling Albert Lee and the Ernie Ball Albert Lee, I thought were both fantastic. The new St. Vincent's look amazing.
Do you know what's been eclipsed a bit by all of that?
The new colours of the Valentine.
They've been very popular. The Sterling St. Vincent in Stealth Black.
I did see that, yes. I thought that was very cool.
I can't believe they've done that.
Yeah, that looked really cool. I tell you the thing that really, really annoyed me about the Ernie Ball booth, and this is something that I'm sure maybe four people in the entire event got annoyed by, but when we were having a little look around, I saw the string display, and I'm just trying to find a picture of it now so I can remember exactly the order, but on the string display that they had for Ernie Ball, it was obviously designed by someone who doesn't know anything about guitars, because this is the order that the strings were laid out in. This isn't just how they were merchandised. They had a big poster. They had a big decal across the back of it. They went extra slinky, hybrid slinky, skinny top, heavy bottom.
What?
Regular slinky. Power slinky.
Oh god.
And then super slinky.
Why?
I know.
Why would you do that?
I was furious. I was so angry. It was just,
oh my god.
Like, I looked at it and I was like, even in terms of like a rainbow, that doesn't make sense. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. I was so mad, honestly.
Oh, that is awful.
I was
Ernie Ball letting the side down. Other than that,
the booth was fantastic.
Maybe the best booth at NAMM.
Well, no, the Fender booth was the best booth at NAMM, but you know,
one of them. Yeah.
What else did we see? I tell you another thing that was very weird was Mark Bass. Did you go to the Mark booth?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mark Bass were having a silent gig.
This was a great idea.
So, okay, hear me out. Mark Bass were having a silent gig. They had two guitar players and I think a keyboard player. A guitar player, a bass player and a keyboard player having a jam. And I saw all these people just standing there and I could hear this noise.
So for listeners, they were handing out headphones on the way
well,
in.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But I could hear this noise and I wasn't really sure what was going on. And I saw all these people stood around wearing headphones, and I saw where the headphones were and I went over and they were silent disco headphones. So it was a thing where you could choose between three different tracks, but they were only broadcasting on the one track, obviously. So we stood there and we're watching it, and it was quite impressive, you know. And then I went to leave and I took the headphones off and I realized I could still hear everything. And I put the headphones back on, I took them off, could still hear everything. Then what I realized was not only were Mark Bass promoting their basses and their guitar amps and, you know, and everything, they were also promoting their PA systems. So everyone was stood around wearing these headphones, but the music was still coming through the PA system, so you could hear everything.
Yeah.
It didn't make any... Again, it didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
It was a weird...
One of the weird things I saw, which wasn't actually a product, but I thought was total genius, was on Sunday when I was walking around the modular synthesizer bit. A guy was like, really loud, shouting over me, like, "Do you want like a demo on like the modules?" I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And he's like, "Here," gave me this pair of noise cancelling headphones that were so good I could only hear what was coming through. And then they both had headset mics that were just talking to each other, so very he could cool. do a perfect demo with no noise in the background and talk to me like we're having a normal conversation.
Yeah.
I was like, every booth should have that.
That was so good. Smart.
It's surprising how slow people at NAMM, considering what NAMM is, how slow companies are sort of adapting to to deal with this situation.
Well, we were laughing, weren't we? I think on Friday when we saw some really expensive boutique brand, I can't remember what it was, and all their demo stations were going through Digitech RP55s.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Like £3,500 guitars going through a Digitech RP55. I was like...
It was... Oh, God. It was that Scandinavian company, Hagstrom.
Really? Right. See, I noticed that with a couple of brands. Who else was it that I saw it with? Oh, actually, Ernie Ball. I went to try one of the... Was it Ernie Ball? Maybe it wasn't Ernie Ball. There was a couple of pedal companies. I went to go and try the pedals.
Right.
And everything was going through headphones.
Yeah.
But they just... They weren't using an amp through headphones. They'd just gone straight into an interface.
Oh.
It sounded... Yeah. I think three...
Chase Bliss were doing that.
Really? Yeah. I think or four different people I went to try. And I played... both the chords that I know. Normally I play them more than once, but I played them both once and went, I can't handle this. It's too much.
Well, I think this is the thing that I was going to say about NAMM in general, is that I saw a lot of stuff I liked, but to be honest, me, you know, Mark and Joe didn't actually like try a lot for a long time because this pretty it's much no loud. Point and you don't
no,
get
no, completely.
You don't get a good representation of anything. Like we went and saw Adrian Thorpe at the Thorpey booth. And he had his pedal board there, and he had basically his new EQ and boost and his new compressor.
And which he was like, the pedal he was launching
it was so loud.
He was he was quite open. He was like, man, like NAMM is not the place I should have released a compressor.
Oh, no.
Because, of course, he didn't have a headphone set up either. No. He was like, does anyone want to try a compressor at NAMM?
Yeah.
Probably not.
No.
I bet it's well good.
I'll tell you the other thing that that I was really surprised that I was into. And it was something that I stumbled across downstairs. So I'm gonna come clean. I didn't listen to all of the NAMM podcasts. The reason for that being that I haven't had time. I did listen to the first two that you did.
Those are the only two with me on it.
No, that you weren't on either of the ones that I listened to.
Oh.
The NAMM Roundup podcasts were the one. Day one and day two were what I listened to. I listened to those on the flight home, and then I fell asleep and haven't listened to them since. But I know that you explained what China was. That
China
completely blew me away. But one thing that I did find whilst I was walking around downstairs was because obviously the more charismatic people within the who run these stalls, they're desperate for you to come and check out their stuff. And I've got quite good at sort of just saying, no, I'm okay, thank you. I can see what you've got there. I'm not really that interested. Thanks very much. But as I was walking past these acoustic guitars and ukuleles, this fella came over and he seemed really nice. And he went, you all right there, guys? Do you want to, can I tell you about my guitars? And I don't know why I didn't say, no, I'm okay, thanks. There just seemed something really genuine about him. He seemed like a really nice guy. So we went, okay, yeah, let's hear it out. What's going on here then? And he went, so these are Blackbird guitars. We make them based in San Francisco. And they are primarily made of a mixture of carbon fiber and linen.
This is so not for you.
And I went,
this is so sorry? Not for you.
Sorry? And he went, yeah, look. And he pointed over to the wall and he had these strands of linen hanging on the wall. And he went, yeah, we take this and some carbon fiber and bosh them together and mold a guitar out of them. And I tell you what, they were wicked. They were really, really cool. He totally convinced me. They were really, really cool. Now, I don't know a huge amount about acoustic guitars. You know, I know how to play a few chords and it sounds fine, but I would highly recommend checking out Blackbird guitars. They were really, really cool. Really.
Sorry, is that Blackbird or Blackberg?
Blackbird, as in the bird that's black.
Right.
The Blackbird.
Yeah, I've got it.
And it's blackbirdguitar.com, I think was the website. But they were really nice, really sort of environmentally conscious. I think they said that they work in a, I'm sure he said that it's like, they try and be carbon neutral and this, that, and the other. It was really cool. Really,
they actually look all right.
You found it,
yeah. They look really all right.
They really look actually quite tasteful, and it's quite different. And they were shoved in the corner down in Hall E, where they obviously were sort of not having a good time. And it was nice to talk to someone really genuine and really cool. And I immediately dismissed them. And I think from now on, when I walk past these sorts of booths, where normally I'd be like, I'm not into this, give the people the time of day.
They look great. I mean, they are also $3,000.
Yeah, I mean, they're a lot of money. Yeah.
But
that was when we walked past those Class guitars from Germany. It was like, they look a bit weird. But then like played it and was like, yeah, there's like amazing craftsmanship in this. You know, I think the thing is that some brands, like Hall E was definitely really quiet this year. And I think some brands got left out by being downstairs when all the other brands were upstairs. But it is always worth going checking out. But yeah, this year was kind of just like, it was basically China down there. Doing a lot of OEM products.
It was very
saw
weird.
The same PA system a lot.
Yeah, well, the one with the lights in.
Yeah.
I saw that a lot. Yeah.
So I was like, that's the kind of proper pub PA system that a pub buys when they don't know what they're buying, but they want a PA system.
Yeah,
it's got lights in it. be great for the Friday night disco.
When actually what they should be buying is a, you know, a Fender Fighter PA speaker, obviously. You know?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yes. So, Matt Knight, favourite things from NAMM this year?
Yeah. So, as I said, I didn't try a huge amount. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm looking forward to trying when I can actually hear it properly. But stuff that I really like the look of. One, Abassi guitars. Probably one of the busiest booths of the whole. Every time I walked past it, it was absolutely rammed.
Was he there?
He was there. He was there the whole time. And I think, to be honest,
was it a distraction?
No, I think that's one of the reasons he was so busy.
Right.
You know, that's one of the main things for NAMM, isn't it? Get a celebrity on your booth.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And of course, most brands have to kind of fight to get a celebrity to stay on their booth, because no celebrities don't want to stay on a booth. But, of course, this being Tosin's own brand, he was literally there all day, every day.
Right, wow.
And you know what? If you went on there and you played guitar, he filmed you on his iPhone and uploaded it onto Abassi Guitar's Instagram.
So, oh, wow, that's cool.
So, I mean, I think for a lot of people, you know, that everyone wanted to try out an Abassi guitar.
But I think the thing that I liked was he was like, oh, people love this body shape and they obviously really wanted the Ibanez one, which obviously isn't going to happen, but not everyone plays 8-string. So they're making 6 and 7 strings. I was like, I'd be so up for buying a 6-string one of those.
Yeah. Oh, what, a 6-string?
Yeah.
Tosin Abassi signature.
Yeah. The 6-string was actually the one that was most popular.
Obviously. You say that like, oh, idiots.
But me and Matt headed over there when Fluff, YouTuber Fluff, was playing the 6-string on the stand. And it sounded absolutely cracking. There were a couple of great finishes as well. There was a really over the top, I put it on the Guitar Nerds Facebook forum, guitarnerds.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum. That is our forum. Is that it?
Guitar Nerds forum?
I don't know.
I'll have a look. I'm on it. Guitar Nerds forum. You're right.
It's Guitar Nerds forum. Yeah, we
Guitar Nerds group takes you somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. I put a picture of a really kind of over the top, like figured, topped version of the guitar, which was absolutely cracking. We really liked the look of that one. But there was some really nice Matt White 6-string that was there. That was
Matt Knight 6-string.
I couldn't believe I got my own signature Abassi guitar. I've never met you before, but I really appreciate the signature model. Matt Nitro.
And the pickups, there were those pickups that metalers everywhere are raving about these days. What are they? The Fishman Fluence. That's it. Yeah, everyone's banging on about those. So yeah, I agree. Those Abassis did look great. It was nice to see a guitar that was kind of not following suit. You know, that seems to be the biggest compliment towards those guitars, is that they are something a little bit different. And everyone seems to be into them. They seem to be being very well received indeed.
Yeah, I don't think they're cheap, but I'd definitely be interested in trying one. If I could try one, I'd definitely be interested in giving it a go. There was a load of probably, like, this is the one thing I realized there is, like, there's probably a lot of mainstream stuff that the kind of listeners are like, oh, did you go and see this? And it's like, no. We kind of just did Hall D, but a lot of the major brands are like upstairs. We kind of caught a lot of the kind of smaller brands. I really liked, not to go on about Ernie Ball again, but obviously I really like the St. Vincent's. We got to try them like before the NAMM show. So I got to sit down and play it through a proper amp without any of the noise, and the HH is incredible. Really into the new pedal. I think they're going to send us one, which is part of their Expression range, the Tremolo Reverb.
Yeah.
So it's like a Strymon Flint, but the Expression pedal controls the depth.
The depth of what?
So I'm really the actual, like, the mix, basically.
Oh, okay. So what you when your heel is all the way back, it's off.
Yeah.
And when the toe is all the way down, it's all the way on. And what, can you control the extremes of the reverb and the...
No, I think you basically set it like a pedal, and then this works as like... I guess maybe it works more like an effects level, I guess.
What I was trying to say there is, are the reverb and tremolo controls on the side of the pedal? And...
No, they're on the top of the pedal.
They're on the top. Like, oh, right, but you still have control over the sound. You just you can only affect one sound.
That's right.
Top.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, only one parameter.
Yeah.
Thank you, one parameter.
but that looked quite cool. The new Victory pedals looked really cool, which were the like preamps in a box, so like all their like most popular amps, but in kind of pedal form.
That's right. They're the Kraken and a Sheriff. I can't remember what else they had.
The Countess was the other one.
Countess.
What amps, else did we see?
Amps on the floor seem to be quite a popular thing this NAMM. Milkman as well were had their...
Yeah, Milkman debuted the amp, which I thought was really cool. It's basically, how to describe it? It's one of their amps that is like Class D power amp, if I remember rightly, with a valve preamp that can be used as an amp, as a headphone amp, as a preamp, or as like an on-the-floor like recording output that had analog tremolo, digital reverb, and I think it was going to come out at about $700. I was like, that is very cool, because those Milkman amps were very, very cool. And they once again shared a stand with Rock and Roll Relics, which was by far one of the best looking bunch of guitars, man, I've seen.
And Rock and
they
Roll,
were last year as well.
Rock and Roll Relics announced their Lightning series as well.
Yeah, which they had the one that's been doing the rounds on social media, I think, today, which is the pink one, kind of like 335-esque with TV Jones pickups in, was on the stand, and it was absolutely stunning.
And the reason for the name of the range is on account of the F-holes, as it were, which are shaped like lightning bolts. You never expect that to look tasteful, but these did. They didn't just look tasteful. They looked absolutely
classy, those guitars.
Yeah, absolutely nailing it at the moment. Rock and Roll Relics, like everything on that stand. They were the best Relics, like custom shop level guitars at NAMM. And I couldn't believe those hollow bodies. I couldn't believe that you could. We were talking about it at the time, Matt, but that you can reinvent the F-hole and it's something obvious and it looks so good.
Yeah, and it looks all right, you know, because it's very easy to make it, like you say, make it look very, very, very cheesy. But no, that was a real, real good, like, guitar. It was like a bit on the pricey side, $4,000, I think.
Wow.
But for a hand-built instrument like that, I thought it was really nice.
I look at you sometimes, Joe, and wish I could reinvent the F-hole, but, you know, it's what it is.
Unbelievable.
I did have something to say. I'll tell you what, one thing that I noticed a lot of, speaking of Relics, and I think this is quite apt, actually, is I noticed, I was looking at quite a lot of, can't call it relicking, but aged guitars at NAMM. And I tell you what, there was some, I'm not going to name any names because that's not what I'm about. There was some bad looking relicking. There was some bad.
You sure you don't want to name it?
No, I don't want to name any names.
I'm quite happy to name it.
I'm not. You can do what you
I'm
need to
name
do.
I'm going
to
name it.
But I saw, and it wasn't just one company. There was a few companies that you would expect. I saw some bad looking relicking.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. So there are some companies that are very, very good at making some types of guitars. And I think it was a testament to what an art form relicking is. Whether you like relicking
or whether
you're an idiot, you can surely appreciate that some companies are good at it. Fender are very good at it. The Fender Custom Shop are excellent at making a relic look like a relic. There was some new stuff by Friedman that really wasn't good enough for the price point. Really wasn't. Like the relicking jobs just weren't on point. And that is not a sort of a sign of the company's standard quality at all. I think, you know, Matt, you nearly bought a Friedman, and we have loved the Friedman tellies. They were absolutely spot on. But they had a couple of bits there which, I mean, really, like, maybe it's the relicking competition has got so much higher. I mean, there were a lot of great relics. I thought Cole had some really awesome stuff out on their shelf. Also, was it Wild Custom, Matt? They're French, Wild Custom that we were checking
out?
Yeah,
they actually they had the one that we talked about, and I can't remember the name of it now. It was Wild Custom / Sauvage Guitars, and they had that kind of crazy half Firebird, half Iceman guitar in black.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
looked absolutely amazing. I think it's sometimes when it's just the arm contour, like relicking goes a bit heavy, it can look a bit like wrong. But then I guess we've said before, like, that sort of relicking isn't a natural relicking. It's become a finish in its own right, because most guitars don't ever relic that way, even if they are that old.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'm not saying that I was necessarily talking about Friedman. I'd like to point out that the opinions of Joe Branton did not necessarily reflect that of the Guitar Nerds Limited, but...
Whatever.
but yeah, it was just... whilst we're talking about weird finishes, there was... Where's my phone? Because I took a picture of it. There was another guitar that I thought was just such a strange finish. And it was a the Devin Townsend signature by who was
Framus.
It?
Framus.
Was it Framus?
Well, Framus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Stormbender. The Framus Stormbender, right? So the Devin Townsend signature. Here are the specs of the Devin Townsend. It's a mahogany back with a quadruple A flamed maple top. Quadruple A flame maple top, which they then painted black. Why bother? What are you playing at? Why would they do that? It didn't make any sense
to me. Relicking.
No, it wasn't relicked at all.
I was going to say, for when you relic it later on.
Oh, right. Okay, for when you relic it later. Well, I mean, I'm not even sure if it was a nitro finish. It might have been a poly finish, but... Oh man, I tell you what, that was very, very strange.
Lights up, doesn't it? The body lights up as well.
The body lights up.
Yeah, the logo. I'm sure the logo on the Framus Devin Townsend, it lights up at the bottom.
Good lord, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't
so you know it's
that.
Got that triangle
underneath
the bridge.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, that lights up.
Oh man. Okay, fair enough. I mean, even so, why are you putting a quadruple A flame maple top underneath it? Maybe it isn't. Maybe they're just saying that. Stick another couple hundred quid
on
it, you know?
I think from talking to a couple of companies, they were like, everyone grades. There is no set grade.
No, of course.
That companies make their own grade. So it's kind of like there is no such thing. And this goes back to when we went to the Music Man factory, and I was like, there was a neck on a Cutlass, and I was like, that is the most unreal flame neck I've ever seen. And they were like, yeah, that's just the quality of the roasted maple we're getting right now is just really, really high. There's some crazy stuff. And I was like, oh, do you never see a neck and, like, you know, say, oh, save that one for later? Because I remember when I went to Gibson, they were like, oh, if we see a really good top, we'll save it and put it in a special pile. And they're like, no, because as soon as a block of wood comes in, it gets an RFID chip and gets a serial number and becomes a model before it's even made. So they can never pull anything off production. So they were like, yeah, there's going to be some guitars in 2018 that are going to have some of the most ridiculous flame necks you've ever seen.
Wow.
But they were like, we don't grade our wood. We just buy good quality wood and we trust our suppliers and that's that.
Yeah, they are absolutely owning it this year. Gentlemen, we are pretty much coming up to time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any other things anyone wants to mention from NAMM that we think the listeners should go and check out at all before we
pack it in?
I'm
trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, with Stinger.
Yeah, the Stonefield Stinger is an absolute cracker. So that's that was the new Stonefield bass. That's a bass that starts on the 12th fret.
Starts on the 12th fret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's,
what?
So it's guitar tuning, but it's a bass.
That was that thing that you put a picture up of?
Yes.
It starts at the 12th fret.
Yeah. So it's got a very short neck because it has the neck starting at the 12th
fret. Goes from 12 to 23 or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. But six string bass and it's strung.
Yeah.
Isn't that just like a... like a Jaguar, like a short scale guitar.
But it's tuned guitar tuning.
Yeah, so But, what, like a Jaguar?
But it's like...
it's only 21-inch scale.
Yeah, and it was like 15 to 80 on the gauge, I think.
And the neck is wider than a normal six-string bass.
Well, it's about as wide as a six-string bass, yeah.
Crikey.
But an absolute cracker, the Stonefield Stinger. Absolutely, absolutely worth checking out. They were brilliant. Relish guitars.
Yeah, you started talking about them. I don't know what that is. Did you talk about them in the other podcast, Matt?
We talked about them in the other podcast.
A very brief overview of Relish guitars for our listeners.
Swedish
built... When you say our listeners, do you mean me and you? Because we're probably the only people who haven't heard this story.
That's true.
Okay.
Swedish built, kind of modular in the way that they kind of clip together. Really high-end, kind of... I don't know how you describe them. Definitely just look up the body shapes. It's very weird. But they announced a new pickup system that's like a quick release pickup system for like literally unclipping pickups and then popping them in. But they also have a really unique pickup selection in which that it's touch sensitive. So there's a little strip on the front that has three kind of positions that you basically touch. And the harder you touch or the longer you touch, it splits the pickups in different ways. So if you give it like the neck position, or what would be the neck position, like a touch for longer than 2 seconds, it splits the humbucker, for example.
Weird.
That
doesn't
very cool.
sound very suitable for on the fly.
I kind of feel that you may not be using it as an on the fly kind of guitar at that price. Maybe you would. Yeah. I don't know. But they were very cool. I mean, there was loads of stuff that we haven't talked about. There was loads of amps we haven't talked about that came out at NAMM.
I heard you were really into the Marshall Origin, Joe.
I thought it was quite a cool idea. I think it's finally the amp they should have actually made.
Absolutely, yeah.
About 10 years Absolutely. Ago. But yeah, they should have put the vintage Marshall logo on it.
Absolutely. Of course they should. What? Oh, God. That really annoyed me. They made an Origin series and didn't put their Origin logo on it. I mean, oh my God. Come on, guys.
It's just good that they've gone.
Come on.
They've gone, hold on, what do people want?
Go on a forum. come on, Marshall. Come on. Go on a forum, listen to a podcast, watch a YouTube. Someone at Marshall has got to have something to do with the outside world, surely. Surely. Anyway, so that brings us pretty much up to time. We're at the end of our NAMM Roundup podcast. That's right, next week we will be returning to the traditional format of this podcast with
Mark and host. Matt taking a piss out of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Mark hosting and me being able to return to simply drinking and occasionally offering humorous anecdotes. But for now, I'm still your host. So thank you very much for listening.
Do you reckon you can get through this bit?
There's something Mark says something about the you can support the podcast tiers.
If you want to support the podcast, you can go over to patreon.com/guitar nerds where from as little as $1 a month you can support the podcast for $5 a month for $5 a month you get an extra half an hour a week, which we're going to record in a minute. And for $10 a week,
you also get access to all the bonus.
Oh yeah, you get access to all the
Matt in Japan.
You get that at $1
and Brandon.
No, you don't.
No, you don't, mate. You just get it you get it ad free at $1.
You're right, ad free
at $1. At $5, you get access to the bonus content such as Branton's Ranton and Matt in Japan, and it includes. I tell you what, if you were ever thinking about signing up to the $5 tier, now is the time to do it because the NAMM Drunk Cast is on there. The Drunk Podcast recorded by Mark Packham, Matt Knight, myself, Mary Spender, and JD Short. After a couple of liters of Golden Margarita is on the Patreon.
That rhymes.
And that is thoroughly worth a listen. I really wanted it in the free area, but Mark Packham, being notoriously the most boring man in the world, couldn't possibly bear it. But honestly, go listen to it if you can. It'd be great. At $10, you get access to all of those things. Plus, you get to become an executive producer and you get your name read out thusly. I'm going to read this
out.
You're actually going to do it?
Yeah, I'll do it in one breath.
Okay, you ready? Matt, do you want to do the backing? Because you never get to do the backing.
No, because it might get laggy and then weird.
No, I think that'd be funny. I think that'd be funny.
Right. Come on, quick.
I don't know. I'm on the spot. I'll just do da 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 da.
Ready?
Da 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 da.
Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Fitz, and Martin Cliff. Matt Davis, Alan Sherman, Blake Murder,
You said Jack Gray, say Jake Gray.
Well, I can say Jake Gray as well. I can say whatever you want. I can say it all. That's right, Patreon. You think you've got one up on me? Well, I've got one up on you. Give me your money. I'll read your names out. That's the story. Yeah.
Matt, were you doing? Were you doing
any names?
Were you doing the music in 3/4?
Yeah, I mean, Matt,
it was really weird.
Matt totally doesn't know the time signature to his own theme tune. Anyway, thank you very much for tuning in, everyone. You can continue to join the fun at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram at guitar nerds, and follow us on YouTube at guitar nerds videos. We'll be back next week in our traditional format for more of these shenanigans. Thank you very much for listening. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.